between the time when the bombs fell and the rise of the Sons of Pteranodon, there was an age undreamed of. And unto this, Cody, destined to wear the jeweled crown of Apocalypse Video upon a troubled brow. It is I, his chronicler, who alone can tell thee of his saga. Let me tell you of the days of high podcasting.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Give us what we desire.
Slow drown in lakes of blood.
Father!
He's evil, a sorcerer who can summon demons.
Now they will know why they are afraid of the dark. Now they will learn why they fear the night.
Out of an age undreamed of comes the most incredible adventurer of all.
What a film, guys. Like, I'm your host, Dave. Let's just get right into it. I'm joined again by my fellow Atlanteans, my fellow Sumerians, my fellow gladiators, thieves, kings by their own hands, Michael.
There comes a time, Dave, when the jewels cease to sparkle, when the gold loses its luster, when the throne room becomes a prison. And all that's left is a store manager's love for his employee.
Truly how I feel every day
I'm also joined, changing my voice up, I'm also joined by Ryan.
Crom.
One of the earliest lines spoken by Kodak in the movie is simply Crom. And of course, we're joined by our own barbarian, thief, warrior, king, Cody.
He is Ryan, big headian. He will not cry, so I cry for him.
I feel like this is an episode that's been a long time coming. We have watched Arnold Schwarzenegger movies in the past before, Pumping Iron, Kindergarten Cop.
Classics of the genre. Pumping
Classics
Iron.
Of the genre.
It's weird what filters out into the waste. Like, yeah, we have so many copies of Pumping Iron on VHS.
I was just thinking about this. I was like, it's weird that we'd done Beastmaster, but not Coney.
We did Beastmaster. Well, here's the thing. I think if I remember correctly on that Beastmaster episode, one of us said that, it might have been me, said that Beastmaster feels like a good primer to Conan. Because Conan feels like, you know,
a good movie.
This is the good shit. As Subate would say, this is the good shit.
That's right. Don't eat too much of that. This is the good shit.
This is like top tier fantasy films, in my opinion, and just a good film altogether. But is this the first time for any of us here?
I hate to say it, but it is the first time I've seen it all the way through.
All the way through.
Well, when you say all the way, yeah, what is the context that you've seen?
I feel like I maybe caught like set like a minute, a couple minutes here and there on like TV. But that's okay. And then like, you know, an osmosis.
What channel was playing Conan?
Probably TNT, and it was probably more Conan the Destroyer than Conan the Barbarian, if I had to guess.
Maybe it was.
I can't tell you how many times I've caught the very end of Conan the Destroyer when he's fighting that weird monster thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. On TV, I don't know. I just, you know, in osmosis, you know, it's been a lot of... I've seen the Milius documentary, you know?
Oh, that's a good one.
There's a lot of stuff on there, so...
I feel like if you're catching this movie, you would have the same reaction Conan has when he discovers the orgy in the end of the second act. Like, oh, I'm on a mission, but cool.
I know. I'd say, maybe that snake call ain't so bad. You know, they looked like they had it figured out.
You know, sort of. But remember, like, the whole thing is also that, like, Paradise, they're right? Killing their parents and shit like that. Remember? That's, like, a big part of it. It's
fine. But that was a long time ago. He said that I was a younger guy back then, whatever he said.
Hey,
No! Max von Sydow sends freaking King Osric, sends Conan, Subutai, and Valyria on this mission to get his daughter. And he shows them the dagger. He's like, he says, there was a dagger like this that killed another king. Was there a dagger like this for me? Like, the whole... He's like, they're basically, Thulsa Doom's snake cult is getting princes and princesses and then sending them to kill their parents so that they can just accrue more power and shit.
Well, they also, because like, he said, oh, that's a younger man. That's not like me. But I think, like, right after that or right before that, he does, like, the midsummer on that one girl where he's, like, jump off the cliff.
The power of flesh.
Yeah, it's right after he does that.
He's shooting snakes.
So I don't think he's, like, totally on the straight and narrow.
Yes, you know what it is, don't you, boy? Shall I tell you? It's the least I can do. Steel isn't strong, boy. Flesh is stronger. Look around you. There, on the rocks, that beautiful girl. Come to me, my child. That is strength, boy. That is power. The strength and power of flesh. What is steel compared to the hand that wields it? Look at the strength of your body, the desire in your heart. I gave you this. Such a waste.
Yeah, I'm going to say it, guys. I don't think Thulsa Doom's like a good guy.
Am I right?
Yeah, I don't think the character is Thulsa Doom.
Cancel Ryan's culture. Over here like, you can't cancel Thulsa Doom.
Ryan is the only guy at the end with the torch still lit.
He's still like,
well, I already lit this thing. I got to burn myself something.
Well, Ryan, to get into the movie, you mentioned earlier John Milius. Has there ever, as I was watching this movie, I wrote a note down, a thought occurred to me. Has there ever been a more perfect pairing of movie and director than Milius and Conan?
I don't know.
I mean, this is such this guy's jam. If you don't know anything about John Milius, he's the guy that had a heavy hand in the writing of the Quint speech in Jaws. He wrote and directed Red Dawn. He's done a ton of stuff.
Apocalypse Now.
Well, he wrote like the A draft of it.
I think he's probably written a lot more stuff that's not even credited and stuff. He's kind of one of those saver guys.
He's uncredited on it's uncredited but talked about on Dirty Harry, Temple of Doom, Jaws, Hunt for Red October, Eraser,
he was like
Saving
super
Private
good
Ryan,
friends with
lines.
He was the one responsible for the famous Do You Feel Lucky Punk thing in Dirty Harry. He's a guy that, if you haven't seen that Milius documentary, you would go to a meeting with him and he would literally have like a pistol on him, like an old timey pistol.
So
he reminds me of a person. He reminds me of like a Hemingway figure where he's like very like macho He-Man or like Teddy Roosevelt. Like I could
but
see
also
him
kind of like aware a little. Not maybe not. I don't know. Like something different about him.
I don't know. I don't know if he like he's a really interesting guy though. Like
he was also like given poetry and he learned of this of the ways of language.
Yeah, like it seems like he was like a really fun guy to have around. Like the way that people described him anyway. Like at least his friends were like. Those directors, they all were like, he was like the, I don't know, like the crazy guy who's like pushing everyone to like do stuff that they didn't think they could do kind of thing.
He was the guy inviting Spielberg and Lucas to the orgies and they were too nerdy to join.
Like, didn't he like recommend the crawl for Star Wars or something? Wasn't that a big?
Really?
Wasn't that in the documentary? Like how like they were like, they watched it and they were like, what the fuck is this, George and stuff? And then,
I don't get it.
So I don't remember that, but maybe we should just go ahead and do the documentary again. You know,
I think
I'm
that's
down
in the
to
doc.
Watch it again.
Let's pause the podcast, rewatch the documentary, then we'll come back.
Here's a few things I know of him that is pretty wild. He was instrumental during the startup of the UFC. It was his idea to use the octagon-shaped cage.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
What a weird guy.
He described himself, because, you know, for those who don't know, right, John Milius was this writer, director guy. I think he's still alive, he was still alive when we made the shift to this far future dimension.
And he was like, alive as of 2024, it looks like the records say.
Yeah, and you know, he has this big machismo, but he also is like, for Hollywood, he's weirdly conservative. He like announces himself as a Zen anarchist, and like,
I think though he, in his defense, I don't think he was. I'm not sure about this, but from what I can tell, I don't think he was ever like, you know, that kind of conservative. Like, I don't think he ever went on like the Trump train or you know any of that kind of stuff. Or I haven't seen anything where he's
like guns. I like swords.
Yeah, I feel like he's like I don't know a different. He seems like a weird guy.
He's a weird guy. Is
exactly I guess right. I don't think he's like he's pulling like a Tim Allen. I guess is what I'm saying here.
Who knows? We can only guess. But I'll read from you from Chattopedia the views section.
So
you know after you've said all of this, now let's find out some more about John Milius.
You must now pay the gods, Michael. You must pay the price.
I'm so nervous.
Hold on. He's a self-proclaimed Zen anarchist, but he also publicly aligns himself with conservative factions in Hollywood. And he was interviewed in the documentary Rated R: Republicans in Hollywood. He has been consultant to a military think tank, the Institute for Creative Technology.
Consulted a military think tank?
Yeah. Milius has said, I'm not a reactionary. I'm just a right-wing extremist so far beyond the Christian identity, people like that and stuff, that they can't even imagine. I'm so far beyond that, I'm a Maoist. I'm an anarchist.
I'm a Maoist?
Any true, real right-winger, if he goes far enough, hates all form of government because government should be done to cattle and not human beings.
Oh my God!
Now
was he
is also
chomping a cigar and like.
There's more. He has endorsed minimum wage laws and conscription. He was quoted as saying that it might not have been bad.
He's
for this
endorsed
country.
Conscription.
It might
like,
not have been
like
bad
the
for
draft.
This yep, that's correct. He might not have been bad for this country if Douglas MacArthur had crossed the Mississippi like Caesar crossed the Rubicon and proclaimed himself Emperor Douglas I. For years, Milius was a member of the board of directors of the NRA, where he was a leader with Charlton Heston in resisting a takeover attempt by advocates of the so-called militia movement.
Interesting.
Yes, he's a,
yeah.
In,
so it sounds like he's there with Ryan with a lit torch.
Yeah, there's some other stuff anyway.
Yeah, Ryan, you hold all of those views, right?
You might be onto something.
So anyways, John Milius is a very strange guy. He's a very macho, weird.
He almost sounds like a punk or something, you know?
He does sound like a punk.
Well, and the perfect writer-director for a Conan the Barbarian movie.
Yeah.
He is like the perfect match for this movie. This is all machismo.
Yeah. This is
like
big, like,
guy, though, you know?
At least, yeah, like, but I think there is like a, there's always like, I think in a kind of guy like that who's so like macho machismo, there's a bit of like childishness about it, like, and like cartoonishness about like how that kind of person sees the world that I think fits with like the Conan vibe, like to have the approach that you're treating something so silly so serious, I think is that Milius magic.
Well, cool. Yeah, and it's interesting to think of what this movie could have been. If you noticed watching this, this was co-written by Oliver Stone, and his original draft for this movie, Cody, you probably have more info than I do, but from what I understand, it was set in the future.
Oh, wow.
I don't have any knowledge of that.
Stone's original
screenplay or Milius's?
Stone's.
Interesting.
And it was going to be, they were thinking it was going to be about a $40 million budget to realize his vision. And everyone was like, no, Oliver. This is crazy.
Interesting, because I thought I had read something that, okay. Yeah, he was, interesting. He was brought on to the project as a named screenwriter. Like, they're like, hey, let's get him on, because he was known at the time. I did not know that he had a draft that was so wild. That's very funny.
It was, from what I recall, it was supposed to be set in the future.
Well, I mean, this could be the future.
Yeah, it could be. There was like that show on.
Can't, because it starts with long ago in the days before the rise of the Sons of Arius, after the oceans drank Atlantis. Come on, guys. It says.
Yeah,
it right
we could have. The oceans drinking Atlantis could have been Manhattan, you know? I was thinking of the, God, I was so mad. I don't think they ever made a full series of it, but they made a pilot that ruled. Khorgoth of Barbaria. And the beginning of that one, it's definitely a Conan-style world, but the beginning of that one, they say it is the future, because they like...
Well, that's
like,
that's like a riff the on blood. Conan or the Barbarian.
I'm just saying, you could do this in the future, like, where it's like not
like,
cyber.
It's like that Aladdin kind of theory. Like, the movie Aladdin actually takes place in a far-off future. That's why the genie knows all those old references.
Yeah, that's why he does, like, a Jack Nicholson impression.
Just like Mako does in this movie. If you want to get Thulsa Doom, you got to be a straight shooter. Now you hear me?
That would be good. I'm into that.
Well, shall we jump into the plot?
Well,
of
what
Conan
about
the
y'all? Like, I guess, like,
yeah, I need to know, before. like we talked about Ryan's, but I'm a little curious about Dave, yeah. But I really need to know Cody's background with this movie as our resident, like, closest
let's
have.
Cody,
you're one syllable
sure.
away, Cody, Conan.
I'll start because I feel like Cody's is probably more interesting than mine. Mine is pretty basic. I mean, this is a movie that's always been around. I feel like it's, to me, it's synonymous with Arnold. And it's Arnold, when I think Arnold, I probably think Terminator first and then Conan, even though Conan technically came first.
Yeah, I think of him as a Republican governor of California, you know, now.
Ryan's over there with his torch, man. He's just like, listen.
When can you stop?
When can you stop?
So if California seems like your kind of work.
We've got one question.
When can you start?
Start your trip at visitcalifornia.co.uk.
But I mean, pretty basic. Watching it on TV, watching it on video, thinking it was awesome, and loving beheadings as a young boy. Pretty like, wild. Oh, that's awesome.
Did you see this as a kid? Like a little kid?
Yeah. I was watching Friday the 13th as a kid.
Yeah, but this is more intense than Friday the 13th, I think.
It's certainly cooler and a much better made movie in literally every respect. But no, it was just a movie I watched. Like, I couldn't say I had any like special strong affinity towards it. I liked it a lot, but it wasn't a movie that like was in heavy rotation. But I did enjoy it quite a bit. But anyway, Cody.
Yeah, I think I actually, it's tough to remember when the first time I watched this was. Not because it was so long ago. I mean, it was so long ago, but it wasn't like, I didn't grow up with Conan.
20 years.
Yeah, I didn't grow up with Conan the Barbarian.
In college,
or in high school and college, I read the Conan the Barbarian comic books.
How old are those?
Well, so there's a ton of different things. The one I was reading was done with Dark Horse. It was, I think it was Roy Thomas and somebody else. God, what is his name? Regardless, the Dark Horse ones, for the most part, were just like straight adaptations. Like they just took what was in the short stories, illustrated them, called it good. It was done by, wow, I just can't fucking find it to save my life. Cary Nord, that's right. Kurt Busiek and Cary Nord. Man, it took me too long. It wasn't worth it. Juice wasn't worth a squeeze. But those were, yeah, so those were just coming out in Dark Horse. Marvel Comics had Conan a long time before that in the 70s. So, like, there's been Conan comics forever. Because Conan's a pulp, you know, property. So it started with Robert E. Howard publishing short stories in pulp magazines. So they were always kind of short. They're coming out pretty rapidly. And then there was a big second following with L. Sprague de Camp. They were another author who took on writing, like filling in other details of Conan. So if you ever saw books in like bookstores or secondhand stores, they'd be called like Conan the Freebooter or Conan the Buccaneer.
I've definitely seen, they have like cool covers.
Yes.
Like, are they kind of bound like Hardy Boys books or like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. They're that size. They're like little, they're slim little books.
I've seen these. Yeah.
But anyways.
Watch Conan solve the mystery, the serpent's eye.
Oh, no, yeah, I saw that Conan, like the movie's based off a book. I'm guessing, is that what they were talking about? Like just one of those books or?
I don't think so. Because Thulsa Doom isn't a Conan villain. Thulsa Doom is actually a Red Sonja, or no, he's a Cole the Conqueror villain.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The big Conan villain is this guy named, it's Amonthet or something like that. It's a Stygian, like it's another Egyptian themed sorcerer. Conan is like big fighting sorcerer guys. But yeah, Thulsa Doom themselves is a different character from Robert E. Howard's mythos. He had a bunch of these things. He had Cole the Conqueror. Cole, if I remember correctly, was like the last living Atlantean. Atlantis sinks, he leaves. It's very much in the same similar style as Elric of Melniboné. By Michael Moorcock. Those guys would later go on to inspire the Targaryens of Game of Thrones. But so Robert E. Howard had a bunch of these. He had Conan the Barbarian. He had Brackman Morn. He had Solomon Kane, which was like a Puritan 1600s themed witch hunter guy, basically. So that was my introduction to Conan, was through that stuff, because I was really into that stuff. I was buying comics all the time. In high school and in college, Conan the Barbarian comics were coming out. I was loving them. I took a pulp fiction class in college. And then I think it was just one of those things where I was like, I think I've talked about this before, where it's like, if there's a movie I've seen and I watched it before I was like 20, I just assume I haven't seen it, because it feels like anytime I watch those movies now, it's like a totally fresh experience, because I'm really like locking in on stuff. Conan the Barbarian, I saw, I want to say like, 2021, like it was around that time, and that was when I was like, oh, let me really watch this movie. And I was blown away, right? Because it's got my guy Arnold, it's got my shit Conan the Barbarian.
Seems like made for you.
It's incredibly macho, but incredibly melancholy and thinky. Yep. It's like, yeah, the fact that, yeah, there's slow multiple points, yeah, where Conan, like, his beat isn't that he does something action-packed. It's he, like, really sits and stews in his thinking.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, he does a lot of stewing.
And it's the fucking best. In the comics, and a lot of things, they don't use it in this one, Conan is described as being a guy of great melancholy and great mirth. So it's just this idea that he's like bipolar in a weird way. He fluctuates from the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, because he's like, through his power, he self-actualizes. He's able to do all of these things. So it's like, hey, I can steal all of this gold and become extra wealthy. And then, you know, in living a posh lifestyle in a city for a little while at the taverns, he gets melancholy because he's like, this isn't living. Like, life is easy for me right now, but now I'm like upset because I'm not really doing what I should be doing. So then he goes back out on another adventure and he's like, oh, let me climb into a tower of elephants and find this place guarded by gorilla men and kill the gorilla men and save a damsel who's being sacrificed, you know. And it's just that on repeat, right? And that's because it's just like that's because of the way
sounds like fiction, a D&D campaign.
I mean, very much so, because the idea is with those books, it's Conan, he always has to be going on a new adventure, right? So he can't become a permanent, like, he can't permanently win because there needs to be another book. Now, Conan the Barbarian, one of the first stories of him is the only novel is The Phoenix on the Sword. Oh, God, I should make sure I know what I'm saying before I...
That's okay.
Yes, okay.
It sounded cool.
The Phoenix on the Sword is one of the first like original short stories with Conan, and it's about Conan after he's become the king of Aquilonia. So the whole setup for Conan from like early on is like, this is a dude who's lived this insane lifestyle. He's the king of essentially the Roman Empire now by his own hand, and he hates it. He's just like, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, it's like he failed upward, right? But he succeeded into a place of failure, because for him, he doesn't want to be king, but he does want to be like respected as, hey, you're the baddest dude there ever's been, right?
Complex.
He's a complex guy. And I'll, anyways, to end all of that, came to Conan with Arnold in my like late teens, early 20s. And it's just been like right there with me ever since. Close to my heart.
I just imagine a 21-year-old Cody, after having seen Conan the Barbarian, just sitting on a staircase with his hand under his chin, contemplating what he just saw. Like,
Yeah, this means a lot. This really affects me, I think. Yeah, basically.
And then you took the young princess that you had just rescued, and you went off into the sunset.
Well, you returned her to her dad, King Osric, and then over the course of many adventures, you end up being king of Aquilonia. And this story too shall be told.
But it never did, unfortunately. Still waiting for that story to be told. We saw him destroy some stuff later, but wasn't as compelling as him being barbarous. But anyway, Conan the Barbarian, to get into it, who wants to be the chronicle of the barbarian?
A lot of stuff.
Going over the plot, you mean?
Yeah.
And I, it's Chronicler!
Yeah. It's Chronicler!
Yeah, Cody. I think you're uniquely positioned here to, as the keeper of the lore.
Okay, as the keeper of the lore.
What the hell did we just watch?
Yeah,
what happened?
We watched Conan the Barbarian.
There was a lot of foam.
Film. There's a lot of foam. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
So the whole
I don't know what that meant, but continue.
Oh, like a lot of foam, like foam pillars, foam rocks. You know,
I
think this looks good. Yeah.
Yeah,
and things could be foam and look good, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. No, I enjoy the way this movie looks.
Yeah, the whole setup for this movie, Conan the Barbarian, it starts, we see Conan talking with his dad, Khan, I believe is his name, but it's his dad. He's a blacksmith, and he's teaching him, hey, this is a key piece of lore for our people, which is the riddle
everything
of steel.
The light touches.
Yeah, he's giving him a real Mufasa. Yeah.
On top of a mountain.
May not always be around.
Probably not anytime soon. I'll be around for a long
probably
time.
Probably not going to make it out of Act 1. So.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be around for at least another 30 minutes, though. Conan the Barbarian, he's talking with his dad. At this point, he's just Conan the Sumerian. He's a little kid. And his dad's explaining, you know, how man stole the secrets of steel from Krom because the giants stole them from him first.
And I love that he's like, on the battlefield. Doesn't he say something like, son, you have to know, like, our god. Like, there's other gods out there, like the sun god or the wind god or whatever, but we have the earth god because we're, like... There's, like, some implication there, like, we suck and we have, like, the sucky
just
god.
Men.
Well, so part of
but
that...
We're men with swords!
What I would assume that has to do with is that Sumeria, the country that Conan's from, is, like, a hard land that doesn't really have much to offer.
Yeah.
It's not good for growing. It's not good for fishing. It's just, like, this dark country in the middle of a continent, and it's like all we have is what we can take from others, which is similar to their neighbors, the Vanir. They show up a little bit later. So Conan talks to his dad. We get this lore dump of this concept that's going to be revealed by them. Oh, I really quick dial it back. I forgot. It starts with a Nietzsche quote right on the screen.
Oh yeah,
like which really should.
This feels very Milius.
It should really key you into the idea that Conan the Barbarian. It's Conan the Barbarian. He's the progenitor of what He-Man is. But it starts with a quote from a philosopher, right? This is more than just a fucking action movie. This is like something with more thought behind it, which is insane. Yeah. So
I kind of love like the random kind of quote before a movie. It's not even a quote really of the movie, mm-hmm. but like I'm thinking of Dune right away. It's just that like I want like that more in like a movie.
You want a single set kind the mood. Of like thesis statement, the start of the movie to set the table.
It's kind of nice. I don't know. It's kind of fun. I don't know.
So, yeah.
Especially for a serious.
That's the thesis statement of Dune is.
What is it again?
As a brief tangent, Ryan. So you like the quote. What's your opinion on like the director or someone literally coming out and introducing the movie, like in Dracula, the movie you're about to see?
No. I mean, it's especially for something like this, because like Mike said earlier, it's freaking sword and sorcery, goofy stuff, but it's taken so seriously that I was like kind of in a raptured mood watching this and stuff, and like
you got those drums.
It was different. More like this. Just like this sort of really serious, sort of in slow, like you know, contemplating movie compared to what I expected. I think
it's moody.
Yes, yeah. It's a very moody movie.
And that stuff sets like a mood, I think.
Yeah.
Like
the quote, I believe, is the...
It does have someone introducing the movie. It has Mako after the quote.
Yeah. What?
So this movie has everything.
What's the thing saying in Dune again? It's like the spice lives all...
It says, at the beginning of Dune Part 2, the film that we just saw... Through the Wastelands, yeah.
It says the spice must flow or something.
Let's talk about that. I believe it's like the spice controls all or something like that.
It's before the Warner Brothers logo, which is
crazy. Is very cool. And we should talk about Dune Part 2 another time.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, keep going.
That story will also be told.
That Nietzsche thing remind me of the Dune thing.
Right. And the Nietzsche quote, I believe, is the one that like, that which does not kill us make us stronger. It's a version of that, right? Yeah. Which sets up really what happens to Conan, which is like, he doesn't get killed in this beginning raid. And because of that, he becomes a fucking Superman. So Conan's talking with his dad. He learns about the Riddle of Steel. The Riddle of Steel is this philosophical idea that we'll come back to a bunch through the movie and actually not get really explained. So you kind of have to do a little digging on your own about what that might mean. Then we see his dad making a sword. It's badass. While he's making a sword, Conan's village is attacked by Thulsa Doom and his allies, the Picts and the Vanir, as well as like his boys, Rexxar and Fulgrim, who are just also
Don't
six.
Call them Rexxar.
They're also have like 6'6" pro wrestling bodies.
Have we said bodybuilders? Have we said who plays Thulsa Doom?
We have not. James Earl Jones.
Mufasa.
Yeah, Mufasa. Like Mufasa.
Ironic. Yeah, Mufasa is basically the Scar in this.
Wow. I mean, really, when you say it like that, it's deep.
Did you know James Earl Jones was in this, Ryan?
Yes, okay. I know who was in it. Like I said, okay. I know the osmosis. I know it wasn't like a blank slate, you know.
But did you know that Franco Colombo was in this?
No.
Franco Colombo, of course, is Arnold's best friend. He plays the Picked scout who finds Conan first.
That was Franco?
When little Conan is trying to ice fish, and then a Picked, this big burly guy with like body paint over
with no shirt on.
Yeah. Yeah, in my head, I thought that maybe, especially in the beginning, because you'll get into this, but like they take basically he sells Conan as like a slave to another
the
people,
Vanir,
right?
yeah,
and so like in my head, I was kind of thinking like, oh, like he's gonna be raised by James Earl Jones, and he's like kind of his a mentee, whatever. I thought that's how the story went. And then
like
that
Thanos,
Max von Sydow was the villain.
Situation.
That's what I had in my head before the movie started.
Interesting. Yeah. So very quickly you're like, oh, this is different because Thulsa Doom attacks. He hypnotizes with his snake-like eyes Conan's mom, cuts her head off. And then the next thing we see, all of those kids in Conan's village are sold to the Vanir. Thulsa Doom disappears with Conan's dad's sword. And then, you know, Conan's pushing the wheel.
We see in this movie how to get the Arnold physique.
How to get the perfect bod. Yeah.
Just push a wheel for like 20 years.
God, that opening, it's funny. So I didn't think of it as him Thulsa Doom hypnotizing his mother, although that does make sense. I kind of just took it as like, and again, like one of the great things about this movie is how wordless a lot of the exchanges are, which is so great.
It's a silent movie.
Which is such a smart way to use, like, as casting Arnold as, like, it's not like a this isn't like, like a Glengarry Glenn Ross role. Like, he's basically a cartoon character, like, animating himself. And he's super good at, like,
he's the best.
Through his bodybuilding background, he's super good at posing and, like, knowing how he's...
when muscles do trick?
Well, like, he knows how he's going to look, and he's very aware of his body and, like, how it's going to be seen, which
is
super...
This is only, like, his, like, third movie, too, so it's just, like, so cool. Yeah. He's, like, the best.
He's amazing.
Yeah, like, they were talking about this in Blank Check. He should have won an Oscar for Terminator, or at least been nominated, I think, you know? It's, like, impressive as hell. And that was... the next movie, right? Oh, after the Destroyer, right? I think so. Yeah, between
it was the same year.
Same year.
This was definitely the movie that, like, as far as I know, like, made him a name. Like, I think without this movie, his career would be very different, or, you know, would have started later.
If he wasn't in this movie, they probably would have cast OJ as the Terminator.
That's crazy.
But it's such that Wheel of Pain sequence is so good. To step back a second, like that beheading sequence, like again, wordless, and I kind of took it not as hypnotizing, but Thulsa Doom just sort of looking at her. It's like, we're gonna kill you anyway. You might as well just put the sword down, stop. And then there's that great moment when he turns, and there's a moment where you're like, oh, is he just gonna leave her and like take her or something? But what? He swoops around again, cuts her head off. It's such a great moment. And then counter to what Ryan thought this movie was gonna be, like, oh, come to me, young Conan. You could be my trainee. Yeah. No, you're gonna spin a fucking wheel for 20 years.
That's why I kind of and that's cool. It's all from his perspective, because it's like her head just like drops. Yeah.
Which is you know gonna come back around for old Thulsa.
Part of me, because there's that the wizard that sort of narrates the in betweens acts by the movie, and that was so good to kind of fill in some stuff. But part of me is like, what if it didn't have that? This movie and just had like it was just all like barely word, like, you know, no dialogue. Yeah. I wonder if it would.
I think it would still be good.
I think it might still be good.
Release the Caldwell cut.
I just was something I thought, like, what if they went all like that far? Yeah, that would be crazy, you know.
But it's kind of it's almost comforting having Mako like chime in every now and then, and it's not necessarily needed. Like, I think the movie would still work perfectly without it, but it's like you're with an old friend.
He's got he's got like a James Earl Jones. He's got just one of those voices where I love hearing them speak. A lot of good weird voices in this movie, actually. Like everybody.
Yeah, everybody.
And there's some good stuff. Yeah, like, and I don't think he over explains anything. Like, for instance, the Wheel of Pain sequence, in my opinion, one of the greatest time jumps in movie history. You see all the kids put on the Wheel of Pain. Time passes by. Conan grows a little bit. You start to notice the other people. They're not there anymore. You just see like empty chains until finally it's Arnold in Conan form, and he's the only one left on the wheel. And again, you don't need Mako saying like, oh, many people fell, but Conan survived. It's like, no, it's just him on the wheel. You see a bunch
visual
storytelling. And I'm just watching this, like I'm chewing on the popcorn. Like, this is so great. I'm not.
Oh yeah. Oh, Milius.
Mako, his character, the wizard, whose name is
Wizard.
I think he's just called Wizard, but he does have a name. I think it's like Arco or something, but I can't fucking remember.
I'm pretty sure they call him by name in the
Akiro.
Movie.
It's Akiro. Akiro.
Arco. AMPM.
He narrates the movie, and calling back to Dune, it's a similar thing that Dune the book does, which is every chapter opens with a brief little in-universe text of written by somebody in the future, which is what Mako's character is, right? His chronicler, which is interesting because it does set up like, hey, every single thing you're seeing is important to the identity of the person I'm telling you about. Okay. So there is something interesting to kind of draw a comparison there. Like in Dune the book, because of that, there's very rarely is anything really like a surprise. Like, if somebody was going to die in the book, in that chapter, it would start with, when so-and-so died, it was a great blow to Paul Atreides. And then you're like, oh, shit, so that's, I know this person's going to get got this chapter. So now you're, like, keyed into looking at these things involving that character in a specific way. Anyways.
That's cool.
So, yeah, Conan, at this point, we're 5 minutes into the movie. He's on the Wheel of Pain. And he pushes
we're five minutes into the movie.
Truly.
He did not skip leg day, by the way.
Every day is leg day.
Every day was leg day for him. It seems like a predominantly leg exercise.
Yeah, it's predominantly leg and back day.
Conan, get off the wheel. We need to work your upper body.
So after he does that, he's the only one remaining. And then the slave owner who owns Conan comes and gets him. Conan begins to live a life of a gladiator. He does great at it because he's freaking jacked. And also because deep burning within inside of him is a desire to get revenge for his family, right? That is a thing. Seeing him through all of this is that
he
one
gains
day,
like purpose and stuff.
He has a purpose, and that purpose is to kill Fulsa Doom. That will come back later.
This all feels like the broad strokes of this. I just keep thinking of Milius. Like, I feel like this is like him, his like id or whatever. I'm probably using that term wrong, but there's like his essence is in this movie. Like, I bet if you ask him, he's like, yeah, that's how you get like. Through pain and suffering is the path forward, and that's how you forge
a
strong.
Bitten by some guy in a pit.
I think you're onto something there, Michael, because that kind of is one interpretation of the riddle of steel, right? When you create steel, it's made by blending it, putting it through a forge, smashing out impurities, and beating it into a place where it is like stronger than iron and stronger than whatever else, right? That's steel. And so, one interpretation of the riddle of steel is that. It's not about the sword. It's not about steel. Actually, it's about the undergoing the process of pressure and challenges, and that which doesn't kill us makes us stronger. Going through that crucible of life is what makes you a harder, stronger person.
I've heard all about this on the Wasteland TikTok trying to tell me to do cold plunges. So this all sounds like the same thing.
It's all in the same. Yeah, do cold plunges.
Milius would probably be a fan.
Yeah, probably.
Cold,
yeah. So, do a cold dip.
So we got gladiator. Conan the gladiator.
Conan becomes a gladiator. Then he meets the Genghis Khan equivalent. He's a Khan, and the Khan. It's the scene starts with the Khan describing that he's afraid his sons will not grow up like him and not know his way. He asks a question of a guy, what's best in life? It's clearly the Khan's son, and he gives an unsatisfactory answer. He gives him the answer of like, oh, isn't it just great to ride your horse and have the wind and have a falcon at your wrist? Basically, like, live the good life, right? Because falconry is like a wealthy form of hunting, as you send a fucking bird of prey off to get the stuff that you're hunting and
sounds
attack
like
other birds. And he's like, no, motherfucker, that is not what life is about. Conan, what is best in life? And Arnold's first lines in this movie are, of course, the classic quote.
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women. That is good. That is good.
And the Khan is like, fuck yeah, Conan, you know it. That is exactly right.
You are now my son.
You are better than my son. You are, well, it truly, it's basically him saying that, is like, hey, this is a gladiator slave, but he is like me, and I am the baddest dude around. And as soon as that happens, Conan slave owner, the veneer guy, is like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
I love that the dad's response to Conan, too, is like, that is good.
Yeah. He's like, okay, you got it. You're one of my guys.
It's so simple. That is good.
Is he like sitting on the table or something?
Kind of, yeah. I think it's they're sitting around a table, but Conan's like sitting, like, it's like a low table. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
It just looks from the angle. It kind of looks like he's like in the middle. He's like,
it looks like he's, well, it looks like he's sitting on top of something. He has a place of prominence, which he kind of does, right? Because in the parlance of this world, like, Conan's the star gladiator. He's like the best football player around. And they're like, look at this guest we have. The difference is he's owned by somebody, which is fucked up. And so, yeah, the Vanir guy is like, all right, I got to let this guy go because he is like the Khan. He is the man. And if he ever figures that out, he will kill me.
Such a good shot. They zoom in on his face and stuff, too. Like,
that is good. As he's delivering it, yeah. And so at this point, cool. Conan has become a gladiator. He's learned all about swordcraft. He's learned poetry. He's learned all sorts of shit, right? He's been given the best education
like
that a slave will get. Yeah, he's like reading scrolls, and then he's bred
in his cage
to women to try and make another fucking Conan, which will, you know, you can't fucking recreate that lightning. And then Conan,
and they all watch as he like has sex with this woman that they offer up to him. They're like, look, what?
Yes,
so just some real there, real like, Dave energy. Hands on the cage, like
he puts a little some animal skin around her for a second before he takes it back off. You know,
yeah, it's intense. It's intense, and the camera does linger longer than it needs to.
It is interesting, too, because, like, he looks at her, he's like, what is this? You know what I mean? Like, he has, like, this, like, he doesn't know of women. You know what I mean?
I think he for sure knows of women.
Well, the way he handles it, he's just like he doesn't know what to do. It's very
he knows
clumsy.
What to do, Dave.
Well, he's very like baby-like at the yeah, gladiator, you know, but it's quick. Yeah. It's a quick turn where he's like, "Oh, I got this," you know. So I was thinking that he's like, does he even know how to fuck? Like when he's spinning that wheel for 20 years, whatever it is, I'm like, does he even know like how to like, I don't know, wipe his butt? Like, but I don't know.
Dave, is that you in Ryan's body?
What, Ryan? Why?
Well, I was just trying to think of like the
why wouldn't
anything.
He know?
I just no, I'm talking about like anything. Does he know how to do anything? And I was just like,
he was like, it looked like, appeared to be like 10 years old when he got captured.
I guess he was
I think
a
he knew how to wipe his
point.
Ass by 10.
The kid knew how to ice fish. If he knows how to ice fish, okay, he knows how to wipe his ass.
Do you know? I don't think Conan knows how to wipe his ass.
All right. So, anyways,
maybe,
Conan flees.
Maybe he didn't have access to like Aquilonian Playboys or something. Maybe he didn't know what those were all about. I don't know. But wiping his ass, I think he had.
Okay.
All right. Conan flees. He's running away from these dogs that are chasing him. He falls.
Well, he's let go.
Yeah, but when he's let go, he gets the fuck out of there, right?
Oh, well, yeah, for sure. But it is important, and again, it gets back to the wordless exchanges where, because we see his keeper kind of just like, you got these little shots of his keeper kind of like, this guy's good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, Dave, it's nice that you call him his keeper and not his slave owner.
Well, slave owner, too. Because he's not given a name, yeah. This character. But he's just sort of like, go, go, you're too cool for this place. Get out of here.
He does yell at him. He says, go, go, leave. He does do that. So yeah, Conan goes on the run. He falls into a tomb, finds a fucking sword. It's sick as hell.
This is a great moment. Sword, I love apparently. The like smashing the sword to get all the dust off of it.
To get the
and I like that he doesn't immediately go for the sword. He sort of like inspects like the king, almost like he's giving him like kind of a sign of respect. You know what I mean? It's like looking into the eyes of the skull of the king. And
well,
stuff. It's a great moment.
And remember, for him, his belief system, Krom is a king who lives in the earth. We're in his mountain, and he's like, he's looking at him, and he's like, is this fucking guy like Krom? There's a guy sitting on a throne inside the earth, you know?
That was cool.
Yeah. So he gets a sword. It's great. He then immediately is traipsing about, comes across a witch. This witch wants to fuck. She says, hey, do you want to know your future? And he's like, all right, yeah, I'll come warm myself by your fire. She says, hey, he's asking immediately, the first time, as soon as Conan is left to his own devices, the first thing he's doing is that he's asking, hey, where can I find this banner? It's two snakes coming together like this in front of a black sun in a moon below. And the
come,
witch is,
young Sumerian, you look like someone who knows how to wipe his ass.
I'm sorry.
I like that Dave doesn't even finish his thought and Ryan's like starts singing, I'm sorry I brought it up. So she tells him, hey, go to Zamora. You're going to find it in Zamora. And then she starts turning into a devilish demon fiend. So
that's
Conan throws her ass in the fire and she disappears into the night.
And that's a wild like scene with like the sound design and everything, her screams, and then she like
everything turns blue.
She goes into the night in like this like ether spirit form.
Yeah, and it's as it's flying out of the hut, things are like blasting off the wall.
He has an interesting response too, where he just after that happens, he flies off and in like a flash of light, he's like Krom. And at this point in the movie, I'm almost like thinking to myself, is Krom gonna be like the Smurf thing? Like he just says Krom to everything. Like, oh, Krom?
Yeah, having a Krommy day. My good Krom.
Is that the first like magic kind of thing in the movie? Like the
first
the
overt thing of magic? Yes, I believe the witch is.
Okay, yeah, because I don't think I realized. I mean, I guess I didn't have really a lot of Conan. Knew much about really the whole thing, and that it was that kind of high fantasy, you know, kind of stuff. So it was just like that was crazy to see, like that lady turn into that witch,
mm-hmm. and her eyes turn all weird, and she got fangs.
We're doing this. Cool.
Yep. So the next morning, Conan, of course, meets his best friend, Subutai, thief and archer, right? He frees Subutai. They go to Zamora together. There's wonderful
civilization.
Music. What's that?
Civilization.
Yep.
Let's go. Let's waste no time.
Exactly. There's wonderful music playing as they become friends and traipse across the landscape together.
It looks fun.
It's good music. It sure seems fun. It is good
music.
Oh,
man, the music.
And at this point is when Conan's really like, something I want to draw attention to is he's always smiling. He's like so stoked about life up until this point, right? He's like, cool, I'm doing this. Like, I'm free now. I'm on my quest. I have this guy, Subutai. He's fun.
These Buffalo Wild Wings are great.
The first thing that's going to happen is me and him are going to sit next to a fire and talk about our gods because
he taught me how to wipe my ass. It's amazing. What a game changer.
What did I do?
Okay, so Cody, you're the only one left of us who has to make a wipe his ass joke in the podcast. Just let that be known.
At least give
so
it
start
like a
thinking
good
about
life.
Where you want to put that in.
I don't, David, you did not make me. I am not who I am because of yours or Mike's or Ryan's actions.
You're so lucky, Cody. Cody, that you're an independent contractor with the store and not an employee.
Cody, what is Bested Podcast? Recurring jokes.
Yeah, comedy's in threes, so.
Well, it's been three, sort of, okay. I guess. Or I guess, Ryan, your first one wasn't a joke. It was you asking an earnest
It was
question.
The setup, yeah.
Hey, sure. All right.
Come on, stop it.
Stuff happens. They go to Zamora. Arnold, Conan punches a camel. They're asking around after this standard. They hear about it. Oh, it's just another snake cult. But if you're going to find it, there's a Tower of the Serpent, Tower of the Snake. Maybe go check that place out.
Which is such a wild line to throw out. Like, it's just another snake
just
cult.
Just one of those snake cults. Dime a dozen.
Subutai and Conan climb they go to climb the tower. They get there. Oh, what's that? There's already another roguish figure meeting them at
you're
the
no
base
god.
Of the tower. She's no guard. That's right. It's Valyria. She has a rope. These two idiots don't. So they decide, hey, together we can really score
big. Well, Subutai doesn't need a rope. He's got two knives. He could just knife up the place. You know, he like sticks the knife in the wall. That's how Subutai gets up. You don't need no rope. Was I the only one that saw this in the movie? Did I watch the extended cut? No one else?
Wait, what?
Subutai, the only people that use a rope are Valyria and Conan. Subutai is sticking his knives in and crawling up that way. Did you not notice this?
No.
Oh, I don't.
This was in the movie.
Okay.
Play the tape.
Yeah, this will... Okay, so we're playing now the scene where you can hear whether he's crawling.
Oh, there he is.
If you're hearing clink clink, then Dave was right. If you're hearing one of these sounds, I think that we were right.
They rob the tower. They kill a giant snake. Conan... At this point, so I did watch, I have seen the extended cut. At this point, I believe, is one of the first extended scenes, which is as Conan's leaving the snake den, he sees a jade version of the Thulsa Doom symbol, and there's a little bit of a flashback of him seeing this standard throughout his life.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. That might be in every version. Anyways, there's a giant snake out of nowhere. He kills that fucking thing.
A practical snake, and gory, too.
Yes. Yeah, it's great. He turns around. Jams his sword up in the giant snake's throat. Subutai's like, oh shit, do I need to help? No, Conan's got it, but he slashes
it.
Thing
he literally pieces. Cut its head off. Yeah. And what's great about this is like, unlike, you know, future movies where you get digital blood spatter, you get chunks in this movie.
They kill
like,
the snake.
You know what I mean? Like he and what I love too, it's like more often than not, it's not a clean cut. Mm-hmm. It's usually a hack.
Yep.
And most of it is cut through and then a follow-up to cut the thing off. It gives it that visceral feel and just like, you know, just it's more of a thwack when someone gets hit by a sword and you're like, oh god,
yeah,
or like the kind of like sinking into like the guts,
yeah. and you love to see it. Anyway.
There's a lot of like spear that you like they linger on like that. You know.
And this is when they go on an unknown length binge. It could be weeks that they're on this binge. We stole the Eye of the Serpent. We're just, you know, we're dunking our heads into soup. Like, we're just having fun.
All manner of pleasures and diversions were indulged. Wealth can be wonderful. But, you know, success can test one's metal as surely as the strongest adversary.
Yes, they're carousing. They're having a great time and they're partying in the city. And then eventually the city guards catch them and bring them in front of King Osric. They think, fuck, we're in trouble, we're thieves, we're gonna get killed. Nah, man.
They're gonna take us to go see The Exorcist. Oh, man.
Yeah, but that's not what's gonna happen. King Osric is here and he has a job for him. And I love this scene because up till this point, right, we've seen them. They're thieves, they're scoundrels. All three of them are dressed, like, extravagantly for themselves. Like, yeah. Conan's wearing a really, like, fancy-looking, multicolored... It looks like they've just been, like, brought from their jacuzzi, and they're all wearing, like silk pajamas, right? It's like, hey, I know you guys are not who you appear to be right now, because you look so out of sorts wearing this, like, fancy attire.
Osric says... How many times do you think Mako asked Conan to retell him the story of the orgy nights with Valeria? Tell me that story again. I love that one.
I don't think necessarily that him and Valeria had orgy nights that we saw.
Oh, well, just him and Valeria. Like, tell me more about those nights.
An orgy involves, like, multiple people having sex at once.
Why do you think Mako's, like, this pervert, too? There's no
indication. He's the Chronicle. He's got to know these things, okay? Yeah. People are going to want to know when they read Conan's story.
Yeah, that's true. He is always asking him, like, tell me about the orgy. When did you learn to
work? Dave is just like, I know what I would do if I was the Chronicler.
I tried, and it seemed like only Ryan heard it. It's fine.
He did the wipe ass thing. He did it.
You said a wipe ass thing?
Yeah, I did. It was fine. All right. Osric hires them to go find his daughter. His daughter has been kidnapped, he thinks kidnapped, brainwashed by the snake cult. They go off and search for him. Disguised as a priest in a very, very funny scene, Conan infiltrates the temple. He's doing a very bad job of pretending to, like, oh, yeah, this is how we pray. And, oh, yeah, this is this.
Aren't they just immediately the heathen there?
Yeah, so that guy's an infidel, right? Totally.
Well, that's the best part. Because you think at this point, you're like, damn, he's somehow successfully sneaking in. It's like, no, dude. They're all just like, I don't know what this guy's deal is. And then
it reminds me of, like,
it's him, obviously. It's that
he's
guy.
Out of place in a way that reminds me of, like, those 90s. Comedy movies with Arnold Schwarzenegger where they're like, he's just a normal American man. This is just a and Jingle on the Way. Like, this is just a normal American dad. Like,
well, as he goes to the cult, like, literally every person he speaks to, as he walks away, they turn their head to look at him like, the fuck?
he's very conspicuous.
Arnold Schwarzenegger can't, like, blend in. That is not his strong suit.
So he gets captured by Rexxar and Fulgrim. They bring him to Thulsa Doom. They beat the hell out of him, and then Doom starts talking.
This is brutal, like, when they beat him. Like that scene was like
foot on face.
I was thinking about Dwayne the Rock Johnson, like, or Vin Diesel in, like, Fast and Furious. They're always like, "Well, my character can't get, like, hit, like, that many times or whatever." And, like,
oh yes, I had that thought.
They would never do what Arnold is
Conan
doing.
Conan is put in some pretty low, shitty situations where he is covered in dirt and blood and shit, and just
we
like
we haven't even gotten to the bottom of that, which is about to happen, in which Conan is murdered,
crucified,
and dies. So, yes.
And they, thank God, they linger on it for so long. Just like.
Yes.
Ugh.
The vultures try to get at him, but he gets one in on him. He's like, ah! Which is one of the best parts of the movie when he kills a vulture.
Like, snaps his neck with his mouth.
That's right, because he's a monster himself. He's able to. He is the predator. He's always the bigger fish. He is the bigger fish.
But then, what is that? That's my good friend, Subutai. On the horizon, Subutai, come! I haven't been able to wipe my ass for days. Help me.
So anyways, before we get to the fucking crucifixion, Conan meets Thulsa Doom again as an adult, and there's a whole fucking scene about that.
Yeah, that's right. That's a big scene.
Yeah, this is where you were getting back to what you were saying earlier. Like, I did what? I killed your fish? That was my younger
days.
Yeah,
that was my youth. I was a different man back then.
I'm all about flesh
It's
now.
All about growth, you know?
Yeah, and then he just looks over. Mildred, could you ritual suicide yourself to prove your love? Thank you. Beautiful. Love it. Love
exactly.
to see it.
Exactly. And then he does it. It's all that is exactly how it happens, and that's how important it is. And he just says, contemplate this on the Tree of Woe, crucify him.
You had the Wheel of Pain. Now let's the Tree of Woe.
Yeah, it's a tough life for old Conan. He hangs out there. They linger on him being crucified on the tree. He's there for at least 2 days, which I think is the correct timing because then it gives him one day back with the wizard. So who else dies?
Oh, are you talking about Jesus?
Yeah. No big deal. It's Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ. Who did it first?
Conan laughs at your Jesus Christ.
Who can say?
Conan laughs at your Christ.
Subutai and Valyria bring Conan to the wizard. They say, hey, you need to help him. There's spirits here. You got to do something. You're a wizard. What can you do? He tells him, I can try something, but it's going to take a heavy price. Valyria says, I will pay it. Right? They're at this cool scene, this cool setting, which is these mounds that are used to bury kings of past, and nothing grows there. The wind does not blow. The wind always blows. No fire can kind of stay there. And they do a bunch of cool sorcery stuff. They cover Conan
in Quaiden stuff.
What was that?
This is straight out of Quaiden. The writing on his face?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anything else you want to add there?
I don't remember a scene in Quaiden where someone gets wiped his ass. I'm sorry, I tried, but I can't do it.
Well, okay.
That was also like the kind of like Jessica kind of had that makeup going on with the writing.
In Dune, too. Yes. All right. So people do get things painted on their face, guys. I don't know how to be the bearer of bad news. Sometimes people do write things on their faces.
Oh, no, all I'm thinking about is Dune. So
I understand. It's tough. Do you know, David? Okay, both of you. These are other characters who have stuff written on their faces. Is there a reason for it? Do you know what they do? In Quaiden, what's the reason in Dune 2? What's the purpose of it?
Well, she's like the new, I can't remember the names.
It's like you're writing your prayers on your face.
Okay.
Yeah, in Quaiden, if I remember correctly, in Quaiden, it's to ward off evil spirits.
Interesting. So maybe it's more like Quaiden than we thought, because what is happening? Evil spirits come and try to take Conan's soul. And Valyria and Subutai fight him off, and it looks badass, right?
It looked cool.
It's really good effects.
Very cool effect,
the lighting is really cool. These like
well, it looked like something Frank Fuschetti must have drawn for the movie or something.
Frank
you know
who?
What I mean?
Frank who?
Did I say his name wrong?
You called him Frank Fuschetti. It's Frazetta. Yeah, I mean, it's probably Frigetta or something, but it's an A.
You know what I mean.
It was just funny. Frigetti. It's like, you know, I don't know. Mikey Linguini. It's, you know.
Franco Colombo.
Okay. Cool. So they bring him back. He comes back. He does another great. For the second time, he shows his sword work. He does his moves. He flexes his hand a lot because it was just crucified and no longer is there a hole through his hand.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, because I'm like, why is he holding his hand?
I think he's technically crucified through the wrist, but his wrists are all super wrapped up, but he just keeps flexing his hand, and his hand looks tiny because his bicep is so fucking big, and he's just a giant of a man. And then they go back off to get the princess, and Subutai and Valyria are like, hey, we'll help you do this, but we will kill freaking Tholsa another time, right? We're doing this for her. To get Osric's daughter back, to complete that quest, we'll kill Tholsa another time. And Conan doesn't say anything. He just keeps oiling his sword. And you're like, damn, he means to kill him no matter what.
Yeah, we're going to kill him another time.
Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, yeah brain check, for sure.
Totally.
He's like actively like getting out like a picture of Tholsa Doom and like stabbing it.
Yeah, exactly that.
Writing a to-do list, kill Tholsa Doom.
They put on some great body paint. It's very sick looking. It's very striking in the lighting to have half of them, you know, covered in darkness and the other half bright white and stuff like that. They infiltrate the Temple of Set. Tholsa Doom turns into a giant snake and escapes. They
That's like a gnarly when his face is like extending like for a little bit when he's like.
It's a great.
And then you see his hands kind of like curl up into his sleeves. That suddenly he's in snake form.
Yeah, it's a great effect for sure. They escape with the queen, with the princess. As they're fleeing, Tholsa Doom shows up, grabs a snake, straightens the snake out with his hands, and shoots it like an arrow, and it thunks into Valyria's
side. And it's
Valyria's
a seeker arrow. It's a seeker snake arrow, too. He's like, seek.
Yep. Yeah. It's badass. He is a wizard of sorts, and it's fucked up. The snake kills Valyria. It's very sad. Conan and Valyria truly love each other. This isn't just some sort of forced together romance. They've seen something in each other. They fought each other back from the end.
You get the feeling like she's like she seems very similar to Conan. Like I feel like she has her own movie that's going on that is.
Oh, I would love to see a Valyria movie. Hell yeah!
Have you guys?
Like, she's a cool character.
I have seen that, but that movie is little, it kind of veers a little more into the cheesy side, like more akin to Conan the Destroyer than Conan the Barbarian, even though Arnold does appear in it, not as Conan, but...
Is that what Red Sonja's about, her?
No. It's not about her, but it's a similar thing where Red Sonja, you know, she's a priest, or she's a priestess, I guess, and then they all get killed, and she's like, all right, time to become a badass, too. But it's exactly right. Valyria, I think, in the books, she's, I think, a pirate that meets Conan. But it's the same thing. She's also, just like Conan, just like Subutai, she's a person who's living outside of the normal lifestyle. She's not living in cities. She's a part of gangs. She's living an adventure.
She is like a strong fighter, which is, I was surprised at like her
well,
character.
She chopped her head off. Yeah, she's like, you want to live forever?
Yes,
you know, she would fit perfectly in the Starship Troopers world. Come on, you want to live forever?
I love that she that is her like her
Starship refrain. Troopers.
Do you want to live forever? She jumps over the tower. Do you want to live forever? She just does this thing.
Yeah,
she's a badass.
Valeria's rough.
If that line, you know, it's said a lot. So I'm wondering, like, is that referencing something? Is that like a old time thing?
Maybe from the comics or something,
even before, like, if it's like from an old written thing.
Well, here it my I just did a quick little Chattopedia Google. If you Chad Google
a Chattopedia Google
if you Chugoogle the phrase do you want to live forever, it's quoted to a Marine Corps guy who used to say, come on, you sons of bitches, do you want to live forever? So it would make sense why Milius knows it, and it would make sense for why it's used in Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah.
The scene earlier in the movie when him and Valeria are kind of like coming together and like being a couple and stuff, and basically like two, like, I love the way she puts it. Like, I'm tired. I've been alone my whole life. I'm tired of like walking by, seeing people like embrace and being together, and like, you know, like, let's just be together. Let's let someone else pass in the night as you know, after the offer from Osric, like, you know, get my daughter, whatever. Like, I love the way she describes that. And just like, I honestly, like, this viewing, it really got to me, like that scene where she's like, come on, I will fight, I will come back from the dead and fight by your side. Like, that got to me on this viewing.
All the gods, they cannot sever us. If I were dead and you still fighting for life, I'd come back from the darkness, back from the pit of hell, to fight at your side.
That's her, like the dad speech in the beginning. That's her, like,
yes.
I ain't making the third act. Sorry, you know.
Yeah. Everybody's always out here telling Conan, listen, I'm not going to make it to the end of the movie with you. Your only friend in the world is going to be Subutai and the wizard. So they, Valyria dies. She asks Conan to kiss her so that she breathes her last breath into his mouth. And then they bury her. And they have they don't bury her, excuse me. They perform a burial service.
Valhalla type.
They put her on a pyre, and Conan burns her on top of the mound that carries
wind
the king.
Wind doesn't blow up there.
And the wizard's like, guys, there's no wind up there. And then it just fucking big old flames.
It erupts into flames.
Two things happen, right, is that Valyria paid the price that the wizard was talking about. He said, hey, I can bring him back, but like they're going to demand a price. And Valyria says, I'll pay it. Or they, I think she says, like, they take a heavy toll or whatever. Valyria says, I'll pay it. Then. She's like, yeah, I'm not making it to the third act. But she is, motherfucker.
Yeah.
We'll get to that
God.
Later.
We'll get
and,
to that.
So Conan lights her a fire. That's when Subutai comes back crying. And the wizard says, why are you crying? Which is rude because Subutai was friends with Valyria. Like, I would cry if any of you died. And if somebody asked me why I'm crying, I'd beat him up. But Conan, you know, Subutai says, he's Conan, he's Sumerian, he won't, so I cry for him. It's beautiful. And then Subutai and Conan set a trap. They're like, listen, Tholsa and his thugs are going to come for the princess, so we're going to fight them here. This is where we're going to kill them. Conan has a great-ass speech asking his prey for Krom. He does not have the tongue for it. No one will know if they're good man or bad. All that they will know is that few stood against many, so if you can help, fucking throw a homie a favor. If not, to hell with you, right? He tells Krom, which is a part of it, because he's interested in Krom, but he's also like, hey, this is the first time I'm praying to help, and if you can't go fuck yourself, because yeah, I'll do it myself anyways.
There's like an antagonistic, or you know, that kind of relationship with like the old gods, where it's like they're not necessarily like my benevolent sky father, yes, but they're like this thing.
Krom is not a magnanimous god by any means. So it's like you're asking his favor. It's like, listen.
He's like, if you don't help me, to hell with you.
Exactly. You know, he's great, because Conan's the man.
It's a great moment. It's a great, it's one of the many moments in this thing. I just imagine like Milius shirtless in a typewriter. Like, I love this.
Gun shaking in his hands.
This is so rad.
Yeah, and he's right, because it is. It is so rad.
It is.
This
it
movie,
is, yeah.
there's many points in this movie where you'd expect after Conan does something or Subutai does something that they would have a one-liner, because that's how movies work. Is a person does something and they're cooler than what's happening, so they have a one-liner. Conan never has
the moment's like, we doing this now? I guess we're doing this now. Like,
what's the one-liner?
I wish I could remember, but I was like thinking, like, is this the first Arnold one-liner? And it was, I can't remember when it was, but there's one point where he's like, he kills a guy or something happens and he says, I wish I wrote it down. I didn't write it down. But
do you remember who he kills? Where the scene happened?
It was kind of probably in the last third or a second. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, I do remember he does say when he's talking to that priest, when he steals that priest's outfit, he like beats him over the head.
That's yes.
I'm afraid and I'm shy. Is this your rope? Priest's rope?
Yes, it's all I have.
Good. That's all you'll ever need.
That's all you need. Yeah.
That was like the only one, right?
Yes.
Like, I feel like.
I think so, yeah.
That's what I was thinking of, yeah.
Yes, and I think that one fits there because it's Arnold, it's Conan being mischievous. It's him being a little trickster. When Conan's killing people, he's just like quiet. He's just like, I'm a silent murder machine.
He does tell Dulce Doom before he beheads him, don't lose your head, but that didn't really play very well. And neither did this joke, apparently.
After he became king, didn't he say, like, did I do that?
Yeah. He sat on the throne and he said, how do I wipe my own ass? Oh,
there we go. Yeah.
I the better one would have been when he takes Thulsa Doom's head and he says, I'll be right back. You know, I got to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We got them all down now.
We'll workshop all of them. Write them all down. Dave, edit out every single instance of can Conan wipe his own ass, and then we'll go through it, we'll put them back together, it'll be the greatest hits.
We'll make a supercut.
An all wiping ass pod.
All wipes. Oops, all wipes. All right. Anyways.
Ryan. Thanks for bringing this up, by the
way.
Well,
then we get to, one of my favorite moments of the movie, and the moment that made me cry. It's like, you know, the princess who they've captured, they've chained her up because she sucks. She's like, he's seen your fires. He's going to come for you. And they know this. They want this. And, we get this moment. If you remember earlier, she's like, I'll come back from the dead and fight by your side. And she friggin' does. And it's so cool and glorious. And it's like shot from like his perspective. So you're looking up at Valeria. She is literally shiny. And she has the line, come on, you want to live forever? And I cried. I cried at this scene. It got me, man.
Do you want to live forever?
This is like, talking about like what's her movie look like. Like, did she just like fight her way out of hell to like show up here, you know? Like,
because she said... Probably. Yeah, and I want
like
her
time
movie.
Moves differently in the afterlife too. Like, has she
She's
been
like,
then?
Like, I've been out of here for hundreds of years. I've killed so many spirits.
Yeah, I have a journey.
Like, wait,
from
this is
the pits of hell.
12
to
hours
here.
Later, you're still here.
and that fight scene, like, I gotta tell you, like, I was nervous and clenching every time because they set it up where they set this trap up where they sharpen all these giant like spears and stick them in the ground, and there's so many scenes of guys falling off horses and falling like through rolling through these spikes, and I don't know about you guys, but I cringed every time because I'm like, there must have been an accident that happened to at least one of those stunt people. Because it looks pretty harsh, right?
I bet Milius was really concerned about safety of everybody.
It was shot
in
like Spain and Italy and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So
was
there's
it?
Probably some questionable stuff going on for stunts, I'm sure.
Well, But Beastmaster had a big kind of pyramid staircase thing too, didn't it?
A like ziggurat. And it,
top, yeah. And it came out the yeah. same year as Barbarian. I think we talked about this. Like, but I think Conan came first, right?
I mean,
by
that's
a few
like
months.
A really common architecture yeah. thing, though, in like yeah, this but, era of time.
Yes. Yeah. Ziggurats are like, they're proto pyramids. They're like the first thing you're going
to
see.
So many like town centers like where, you know, everyone's going down to the ziggurat.
We just love hanging out at the ziggurat on a Friday night, man.
It's a great name for like a building. We should bring ziggurats back. Yeah. No one's building ziggurats anymore.
No one's building ziggurats anymore.
Why? Why not?
We need to start. Listen, the wasteland is full of them. There's plenty of ziggurats out there.
Really? I need to find one. I want next time I have PTO, I want to visit a ziggurat.
Yeah, whenever Dave lets you free from the wheel, you should go check ziggurats. Out the ziggurat.
Ziggurats in the wasteland are basically like gazebos. You can rent them out and have like a beer party up there. It's fun.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, Dave does get to do this. The thing is, you know, he gets to go out and rent gazebos and have beer parties.
A beer party
and orgies. I would like there to say go. That earlier in the movie you skipped over it, but Thulsa Doom is having a full-on orgy when they come to rescue the princess.
Yeah, thanks.
They even got like jaguars in there. It looks great.
Oh my god, the random cut, like, because you don't see the jaguar I don't believe as they're establishing the orgy scene. It's just a cut to this and you're like, oh, a jaguar is here too, okay.
So sets the mood.
And they're having hand stew. Like as the guy's stirring the stew, there's literally a hand that plops up to the surface. And later on, as Conan, as they, you know, rescue the princess, Conan takes the big hand stew, tips it over, and a head falls out.
Oh yeah.
It's like putting a bay leaf into something. You simmer it with it in there. It gives it a little extra oomph.
They do there is a lot of cannibalism going on in there.
It's actually, it's a nice tomato bisque, the soup. The head and the hand is just for
show.
That
was a green-ass bisque. Is it supposed to be so green?
It's a green tomato.
All right.
But anyway, getting back to the, let's resume. So Valeria's come back from the dead for one great moment to she doesn't kill Raxor. She just sort of like, you know, hits a sword and like, you know, pushes him back or something, right? Like,
she blinds him.
She blinds him, yes.
Right.
She stops
stops
Rexor from doing the mortal blow, and then Conan, you know, chops him up. He doesn't
with
really
his
chop
dad's
him up.
Sword, doesn't he?
Yes. Rexar is wielding Conan's dad's sword. Conan swings the Atlantean sword. It goes through the blade. It breaks it. Kills Rexar, takes his father's sword. He does his gladiator salute to Krom, right? He's like, cool,
yes.
I've done
it. He poses for the camera.
Yes, yeah. And this scene, this prolonged my crying, because when the blade, because I recognized the sword, and when it breaks in half, the tears started welling up again, because I knew what that meant to Conan, and he takes it, and you'll notice later, I think, that's the sword he uses to behead Thulsa Doom. Right?
Were you under the influence of like any Baja Blaster or Livewire?
No, I was...
Did you have that Black Lotus, that strong shit from Stygia?
No, I dipped my finger in the hand stew and tried it. I didn't care for it, so I don't know.
didn't care for the hand stew.
That scene got to me when the sword broke. I was like, oh, like that, and just when he gives that salute.
I mean, it's cool. It's cool.
Oh, so cool. I'm right there with Milius, shirtless. Like, yes, this is awesome, dude. Dave, come over here. Look at the scene I just wrote. Like, check this out.
Bump chest.
Oh God, that's awesome.
I know it's different guy, but just shared Paul Schrader on that talk show, that podcast, and he's talking about his writing process back in the day, and he said it was just, I would start writing at 10 p.m. till about 5 a.m. and it was alcohol,
oh my god,
alcohol, nicotine, caffeine, cocaine, and then repeat alcohol, nicotine, caffeine, cocaine, just repeat. So all these guys, they were.
It was a wilder time for sure.
Yes, the 1970s.
Imagine when John Milius has a writer's block. He just goes outside and shoots a gun or something. Like, all right, I've cleared my head. Let's go back.
Let me just consult with the U.S. military.
Let me talk to my old friend better. Smith and Wesson.
So that's basically the climax of the movie, because the next scene is just Conan is right there. He's back to the Temple of Set. Thulsa Doom is trying to convince all of his followers to burn themselves alive, or at the very least start burning everything to
cleanse,
go out and burn the world down. It's Thulsa Doom realizing, because Thulsa Doom, he did show up to that fight, right? And
he was there.
He fires off a snake arrow trying to kill the princess, because if he can't have her, nobody can. Subutai dives in front of it with the shield, catches it. He's a fucking hero. Conan and the princess go back to Temple of Set. Conan just sneaks right up on Thulsa. Thulsa's giving the speech because he's rattled. He's like, wow, I've lost power. This guy is, he is the new man, and I'm not the man anymore. So I'm going to just like force all my followers to do this thing, to self-sacrifice in this moment, and I don't know, exert my power over them. Conan shows up, and he's like, not today, motherfucker. Thulsa tries to get out of it. He says, hey, really, I'm your dad. I've given you more life than anybody. I've given you a whole purpose. Conan, he pauses for a second, says nothing. He thinks otherwise.
He like contemplates. He's like, oh, wow. Like he has,
and then he just chops his fucking head off. Right. With like, takes his father's broken sword, chop, the head comes off.
Picks it up, shows it. Like, shows it off to just everyone, just like, look at it.
Here's your priest. I'm done with him. Throws his head, throws his dad's broken sword, because now Conan has completed the first quest of his life, and now he can be his own man, right? He is 20 some odd years old, probably
finally checked the box off the quest log.
He's checked off the main quest, and now he's like, cool, now I get to live my life. Because, right, Thulsa Doom does give him pause. He's like, hey, I put you on this path. I gave you a reason to push through.
It's that whole,
the thing
like,
that did not kill you, that made you stronger. If it
exactly,
wasn't for me,
it's the whole theme.
This brick shithouse of a killing machine badass.
Yeah. So, I put you on the Wheel of Woe. The Wheel of Woe gave you this body.
So don't you owe me this, right? Aren't I a superior person to you?
And I am that Nietzsche quote.
He pauses, and he just doesn't let it happen. And he chops his fucking head off, and then he pauses. He sits on those fucking stairs. He watches as all those followers, as that cult drift away, they throw their little torches in the water. He doesn't say a word to them. He doesn't give a shit about them.
Except for
Ryan. He
cares
about himself and his own quest now, right? And he thinks it over. And I guess he decides, okay, cool, I guess I'll fucking do the next thing. And we find out that the next thing will eventually lead him to the throne of Aquilonia, the end of Conan the Barbarian.
I love that it's not a clean swipe to decapitate Thulsa Doom. It's a few thwacks. And well, if I remember correctly, he thwacks him a couple of times, and then Thulsa Doom is sort of kneeling in front of his followers at the top, and Conan kind of grabs the top of his head and finishes the job and just holds it up. It's got to be, as a kid watching this, it's such a striking image, because there's so many shots of Thulsa Doom, like the camera's behind him, and it's like looking down at all of his followers down the stair, this giant staircase. You see all the lights of their torches, and just that next shot of Conan. Oh, we also forgot to mention, there's a great transition after the battle with Rexxar. When Conan holds his swords up, it dissolves from Conan doing that pose with the swords to Thulsa Doom. And it's such a cool dissolve. And just like this, you know, Thulsa Doom is his next stop on his last stop on his quest. And seeing that as a young kid, a guy throwing a decapitated head down this giant staircase as it goes bubble, 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 bubble down the stairs. And everyone just sort of like, well, I guess that's it, right? We could go now. All the followers are like, all right, well, screw this. There's always another snake cult, right, guys?
I'm surprised. So I never saw Conan the Destroyer, but I know its reputation. And I'm like, I am surprised and kind of bummed that this didn't like result in like a few of these movies. Like, it feels
definitely
like
definitely would be like, cool, here's the blueprint, make sense.
Yeah, it feels like such a fun world that there would be a possibility space in there to like do a bunch of different stuff, for like, I don't know why there was never like a, I don't know, like an HBO revival show of it that like really did well or took off or something like that.
There was the Jason Momoa remake, but
I mean, I know there's been stuff since then, but it seems like it hasn't really hit like that well.
But at the same time, this movie, I don't feel like, I mean, it is, it sucks that never happened, but this movie feels so complete on its own. I don't feel
it's huge. It feels like you're watching like,
it's an epic.
Several little mini stories almost.
I think also like Arnold was like not wanting to be just a sword and sandals guy,
the Conan.
Yeah, that's
like, that's smart on his part.
My understanding of it has more to do with De Laurentiis, the producer on it, because Conan did have Arnold had a contract with them. I mean, it's basically right. And they did Conan the Barbarian, the Destroyer. There was supposed to be a third one. There was supposed to be Conan the Conqueror, which would be that final thing. But at the same time that it was planned to come out, Arnold did The Predator, and his like contract with De Laurentiis ended, because he'd also done Red Sonja and
Raw Deal.
Yeah. So it's like his contract was up with De Laurentiis. And like Arnold has always wanted to do the final Conan movie. He still talks about it. He's like, I would love to do King Conan. I would love to do King Conan. I'd love old as dirt Conan.
That'd be great.
And that's like he's constantly stewing on it. And I honestly bet we searched those dunes long enough, we'll find a copy. But it was because Dino De Laurentiis, like, notorious cheapskate, apparently. You know, Arnold had no interest in working with him again, even though he liked the Conan property.
Like at that point, like Arnold's making like $20 million a picture, you know.
Kind of thing.
So it's just like.
I mean, John Milius, you know, and Arnold, it looks like, you know, at least as of 2024, they were both alive. So maybe, like, what if Milius came back and it's like, I'm making a movie again, and it's Conan the Conqueror with Arnold.
I'm sure Milius has, like, really bad health problems, right? That was, like, a part
of
the doc.
I don't think.
He doesn't need to speak. He just needs to write, you know?
Oh, okay, nice.
Shirtless,
as long as he can still, I mean, as long as he's got to make sure, like, I don't know what his lifestyle is now, but his doctor, if he's gonna do this right, his doctor has to, like, clear him for, like, a massive amount of cigars, whiskey, and cocaine.
No more hand stew, though, that's right off.
You want to make sure that's done in a safe environment at that age.
It's kind of nuts looking at Dino's producing credit list. It's like,
hit us.
He did a lot of stuff before this, like, you know, Death Wish, the King Kong remake, you know, Orca, and then it looks like, you know, eventually got into doing.
When you say King Kong remake, are you talking the 70s
one? Okay. Yeah. And Jeff Bridges.
You know, Flash Gordon was one, and then Halloween 2, Conan the Barbarian.
Maximum Overdrive with Stephen King.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, he did a bunch of Halloween sequels, like Season of the Witch.
Oh, wow.
And some Amityville sequels, you know, Destroyer, then Dune, the, you know, 84 Dune.
Oh, that was Dino, wasn't it? Oh, wow.
You know, eventually did, like, Blue Velvet also. He did Manhunter, Michael Mann's.
Blue Velvet?
Yeah, Blue Velvet. Manhunter, which rocks, Michael Mann's Hannibal movie. Evil Dead 2, you got in here.
Wow.
Army of Darkness, and then that's when they start kind of falling away, when it's like U571 was a big one.
It looks like he kind of just becomes the Hannibal guy in the 2000s.
But that 80s and 70s run, there's a lot of big things. But yeah, one of those guys.
Oh my god, he did this movie. All right, guys, did anybody ever see Rumpelstiltskin?
I
remember vaguely seeing the box in video stores.
Memory is the box art at the video store all the time.
The theater, Cinemagic, you know, in Bartertown over there. They do like VHS nights, and it's like the first Friday of the month or something. They'll play like a bad VHS movie. And before Dune 2, they were doing the trailer for the next VHS night, and it's Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh,
the trailer looked wild.
That movie, the cover art, like, haunts me. We should cover it. It seems like a fucking nightmare.
Well, we love nightmares on Apocalypse Video. Anywho, but any closing thoughts on Conan the Barbarian? Like, how'd you guys feel when this ended?
I do think it's like, my negative about the movie is I feel the length. Like, I feel like, I think it's the way it's paced where it feels like a bunch of stories that are like compacted into one. And it's long. So it's, I don't know. It's got that.
It's over, like, I don't know, 10 minutes. So it's a long one.
Yeah. It's over 10 minutes. 10
minutes. Yeah. It's 2 hours. It's 2 hours and 10, I think. Right. Like, or
for the extended cut,
something like that.
That's one I must've watched then.
Well, the normal cut is like 127. The extended cut is only 3 minutes longer.
It's like a 1 to 3 minute difference between the various cuts. It's not much.
The one main scene that is in the extended cut, which is, I think, it's a smart call to take it out, is when Subutai and Conan are setting up their traps on the mounds. Conan and him have a scene where Conan's like talking about the wind, and he says it reminds him of like picking blueberries with his dad during like spring. And Subutai's like, oh, that reminds me of this memory of life. And Conan's just kind of like, yeah. Like, it's just like a very minor little thing of them talking about their memories, which it is, I think it's a smooth cut, because while it's nice that they talk and it shows them being friends, like, in the theatrical, it goes right from cool, like, Crom, give me this thing to, all right, we're setting our traps. We're in battle mode.
Yeah.
Like, it's straight to like,
it's like one of those, it's like on its own. It's a perfectly nice scene. It is nice. And, you know, and like, I feel like that's something that would happen, like, you know, kind of the calm before the battle mm-hmm. type of thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? You have a quiet moment. Yeah. I did have that thought, like, as I was watching the extended cut, I'm like, okay, this is probably the extended scene, right? Like, it felt like a scene that, while nice, like, it could have been cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slow-paced movie in a way that I appreciated, that, like, for especially, like, an 80s sort of action movie like this, like, it sits and it contemplates, which is, like, which I like. It had a vibe,
yeah. You know? It's not as, like, dumb as you think it's going to be. Like, I don't, I say that affectionately dumb, but, like, it's not, it might surprise you.
Looking through the Letterboxd ratings, most of the negative reviews or people that gave it lukewarm reviews cited the length as the issue. And yeah, like Ryan, I thought that's one of its strong suits is its pacing and that it's contemplative and it allows its care. And I think my main takeaway watching it this time was how much goes unsaid. It's all facial expressions and that. And I really appreciate that stuff. This is definitely what you could call a vibes movie.
Yeah, it's one I wish I saw in theaters.
But. I recently watched the film with a good friend, Morten Hoof. As soon as it was over, we both said, that's vibes. Like, it's vibe cinema.
Yeah.
Well, especially how it ends. Like, you get that last great little coda where Mako's like, this story shawls. You see Conan literally as king. Yeah. Like, in a really, I love that it's sort of minimalist. He's just on the throne, and just surrounding him is like kind of a reddish background, and there's like kind of mist billowing in or something.
It's great.
This story shall be told. And I also love that the end credits, it just pops to the snake logo, the Thulsa Doom logo, and it stays static as the credits go over it. It's such a cool vibe that this movie ends on.
Yeah, and that music's really big, too. Mm-hmm.
The music, yeah. Basil Palidoris, the guy who did, you mentioned Hunt for Red October, he did that. He also did RoboCop. That's probably one of his other big ones. He worked with Verhoeven a few times. He did Total Recall, so great score. Again, the drums are perfect. It's like the constant war drums that are like, you know, it's kind of like the movies, the music is suggesting the war to come at the end of the movie. It's these constant war drums. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a I really enjoy movie. It too. And it's like it was one that kind of is always sort of I was just barely away from, you know, just in the peripherals, and I just never got a chance to really watch it. But a lot of people, I love this movie, and it's cool.
I'm glad you got to check that off your list. It always feels good to get like a
classic, you know. It's nice to get like a classic off.
It's a classic that features one of the biggest movie stars of your youth. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those where you're like, oh, that's right. I haven't actually seen all of Arnold Schwarzenegger's movies. Like it's not like he did a million, but there are some that were just like before the time that you really got into movies. Like. There's like, I think Raw Deal. I think I've probably watched that once with Dave in the past, but I don't remember it. But there's a couple of those for me as well, where it's like those early ones. I've seen Hercules in New York. I was more certain that I've seen his first movie than I have some of his later ones. So yeah, it is. It's definitely in my experience. It is. There's something unique about it. It's not just like, oh, it's a classic of its time. It's like, yeah, it's a classic, but it also has this guy who became the guy.
And I think just like as a youth, that was more like drawn to, you know, lasers than swords, I suppose. So that's just
have you heard of laser swords, Ryan? Because that's what
I do like laser swords.
All right, sick. Yeah, okay.
So I franchise think I think you're gonna love, Ryan.
So, yeah, so I'm just saying, like, that's probably why I maybe missed this one, you know, where I was just like, you know, wasn't gunning for it right away.
Yeah, well, you know what else, did you watch Beastmaster as a kid?
Mm-mm, not until we watched it.
Okay, wow. Because I like I said, Conan the Barbarian didn't watch. The Beastmaster I watched a lot, and
I think that's because that was its whole thing is on TV. We talked about that it was like a TV rotation.
Yeah, but the Beastmaster is very much like it's Conan the Barbarian for kids because he talks to animals.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as like slow and meditative.
I don't remember the Beastmaster show where he ever like had sex with a woman and threw her into a fire pit.
Yeah, it could have only been improved by it. Although he does, the first time he sees a woman, he peeps on her and she's fully nude.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. It's true. I forgot about that.
Oh, those
80s. 80s PG, right?
80s PG.
Well, it sounds like unanimous recommends for all of us here for Conan the Barbarian. Is that...
Yeah. Wait, Cody, do you recommend it?
You know, that's the thing. Yeah, of course. Yeah. This is one of the few movies that I do rewatch. Like, I don't rewatch a lot in my life. Life's too short. Got to watch new stuff.
I could see.
Conan the Barbarian is probably a yearly watch.
I was about to ask you, when was the last time you watched Conan, Cody?
In the last 2 years, I think. I watched it with one of my various mutant brides.
I wouldn't be shocked if you got a Conan tattoo.
Brother?
Some Conan related
watching it this
thing.
Time, I was like, how do I not have Valyria with "Do you want to live forever?" Text under it. I'm like halfway there. I'm like, what about this? What about the Atlantean sword? That shit's so sick. Yeah, no, I'm sure. But by the time my body is burned up and turned to ash, there will be a Conan tattoo on it.
What about you just do all the things they write on their face?
I would love to do that. I would love that. So sick.
What did we call it ourselves back in the old days? It was Arnold's Children or something like that.
Arnold's Bastards.
Arnold's Bastards.
Yeah. What?
Was this a joke around the time that it came out?
It was around the time, yeah, it was around the time when his infidelity with the maid came about in the news, and we jokingly
said that that's our turn, calling ourselves on the podcast.
What the fuck?
Bastards.
I wish I was Arnold's best. The thing is, I thought about this in the movie. The kid they cast as young Conan, I think, looks like a young Arnold Schwarzenegger. He has the right look.
The face.
And then my thought was, did that kid, was he just like, oh, this experience changed my life? Is he also really Jack now? Because I feel like if I was a little kid in a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'd be like, hey, I want to be like you. Now guide me. Teach me your ways so I can start from way younger and become just an absolute monster. You know what I mean? I think I watched it now and I'm like, I wish I could be as buff as him. It's impossible. Or is it? I don't know.
Arnold, can you teach me how to be a real estate millionaire, whatever you did?
I would become a real estate millionaire based off my bodybuilding funds and then become a movie star.
Just get on the wheel of woe. That's all you need.
The wheel of pain.
The wheel of pain.
Yeah, no problem. Good. Just put in 20 years on the wheel of pain.
Consistency on that wheel.
Consistency on the wheel. No days off. No days off on the wheel.
No. No wiping your ass.
And that's
I love
that's the end of the episode. Nailed
that's
it.
The end of the episode. You know, wipe your ass, and we got some to-dos. Cody, you got a tattoo to think about getting. Ryan, you got. I picked a perfect movie with laser swords you can watch. It's called Spaceballs. Check it out.
Cool.
I think you'll like it. And that'll do it for this episode. Mike, I don't know what there's to say for you. Mike, you and I can go to the Cinemagic and check out Rumpelstiltskin, I guess.
Thanks for letting me out of the store.
Our quest isn't as cool as Ryan and Cody's, but, you know, it's all right. Not every quest leads to giant bulk muscles and real estate empires.
Classic.
But that will conclude this journey of the Apocalypse Video Podcast.
Crom.
Enough said. Crom.
And so did Cody return his long overdue videotapes to Apocalypse Video. And, having no further concern, he and his companions sought lost cinema treasures in the West. Many films and Avatar sequels did Cody find. Honor and glory were heaped upon his name. In time, he became a store manager by his own hand. This story shall also be told.